Hello, everyone. Today is Thursday, March 19, 2026. This is the week in charts. Obviously, I want to thank everyone for attending. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be here. So, what are we talking about? Well, current market conditions. Every week I say, I'm going to have a lot to say about that, but this week I really mean it. Obviously, your questions on trading, your favorite stock and crypto picks. I really haven't been doing a lot of crypto work lately just because it just has been such a bad market. But who knows? We might find something there. But shame on me. As I often say, do your homework even when you don't think there's anything to do. I want to continue to harp on the methodology in action, especially now that we could be going into a bear market. It's not looking so hot. And we're going to flesh all that out in a lot of detail. I also want to talk about when the VIX matters. Last 2 weeks running, we had VIX trades. We didn't have any this week. But go in and watch those last two shows. Also, if you go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Dave Landry, and go to Trading Quick Clips and also Methodology in Action, you'll see those VIX presentations. And it's important for you to pay attention to VIX, especially now. So my focus this week is when the VIX matters, and now is one of those times. Q&A, obviously, if you have any questions, just ask them. There's all my contact information. I'll circle back to that in just 1 second. There's a disclaimer screen. As you know, you can lose money trading, or as often sum it up, all predictions are about the future, and a lot of stuff can happen between now and then. Once again, there's my contact information. You can also reach me at dave@davelandry.com. All right, as I've said a million times, the missing piece for me was to actually see a trader make trades. Any trader can go out there and cherry pick one or two fantastic trades and show you. And in fact, I was watching a webinar with someone. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but they are being sued by the SEC now, or the FCC. I forget which one. But anyway, the guy laid out a methodology, and it seemed plausible to me. It wasn't something I would necessarily do. And then he shows this option trade he made. And he made all this money, but it's like, wait a minute, that had nothing to do with what he just said. It was like an off-the-cuff trade, and he threw it in to show how much money he made. So that doesn't do anyone any good. But way back in the day, working with traders and working with the hedge fund and actually seeing these traders and hedge fund make trades, I was doing programming and research and technical analysis, stuff like that. But actually seeing traders make trades made me feel a lot better, seeing the ups and downs especially. Anyway, that's the hard part is the ups and downs. We talk a lot about the downs today, along with some ups. All right, so let's jump into the mystery charts and the methodology in action. I had my AI program generate an image for a beautiful disaster, and this is what it came up with. And, I don't know. Reminds me of a friend that went to Taiwan and got something that didn't wash off. Anyway, this was an IPO a while back, and I meant to grab the screen capture. My apologies, but John Ross in our Facebook group was talking about this one, and it comes public and has a pretty good first day, obviously. But we're not going to trade an IPO on the first day, okay? We're going to wait until at least day five or the close of day five. Now, I did bend that rule a little bit, as you'll see in 1 second. But anyway, so that's day one. Now, if day one sets the high for the week, then your buy is at a new closing high on day five or beyond, but it also has to close above that day one high, okay? If that high is exceeded over days two through four, then you go off closing high. So hopefully that'll make some sense as we go through this. So that's day two, day three, day four, okay? Now, on day four, it exceeded the day one high. So you forget about the day one rule, okay? And your new entry is going to be any close on day five or beyond above the closing high, which was set on day four in this particular case. And it's not nearly as complex as it sounds. It's a very, very, very simple pattern. I have to sneeze at some point. This webinar, ugh. Anyway, so in this particular case, you'd buy on the close. Now, I'm not nuts about lower price IPOs, but I figured it was worth a stab. And in this particular case, it was doing so well on day five, I actually front ran it a little bit. And I bought 600 at this level here. Now let's break it down. Down below, you can see the actual trades I took. So you can back up this video. So let's take a look at that again. So that's day five. Again, I front ran it a little bit. And this is like a $7 IPO, whatever the case may be. So I figured 1 point would be plenty. That's percentage-wise, 20-something, 30-something percent. So I put it at an IPT, initial profit target, limit order at 996. So 896 is where I got in. 996, so flipped out 300 of those shares and made $300, 1 point, right? Now, it began to really melt up. And I kind of felt like, I was like, well, I still have 300 shares on, okay? And the rule with this hybrid money management and position management approach of mine is to sell half and hold on to half for hopefully what will turn into a home run. I know I said hopefully, but you're positioning yourself for the potential for unlimited gains. If you trade for limited gains, you're gonna have a tough road ahead. And that's why I'm no longer, well, I never really was. I was always willing to stick with a position as long as it moves in my favor. But many years ago, I was very, very interested in swing-based systems to capture a move over a short period of time. But I've since learned to ride out that second loaf because that's where the real money is. But anyway, I just felt like it was a gift horse. So at $29 round numbers, remember, I got into this thing at, I think it was 8 or 9. Let's just say 9 round numbers. So that's like a 300% move over 2 days, 2-3 days. That doesn't happen that often. Now, stock got halted. There's something nefarious going on, possibly. The company says, that's just some kids on Reddit, pumping the stock. So who knows? So this was appeared to be turning into a great trade. There it is. My old mic had a sneeze button. I need a sneeze button. Somebody's like, I've never seen you sneeze in a webinar because I have a sneeze button. Anyway, so is this stock now worthless? I don't know, but we'll find out. But it's been halted since November 11th, I think. So the initial investment, I put up $5,376, 600 shares at $896. Now, the initial profit target, 1 point higher, okay? At that level, I pulled out $2,988. So that's my money I'm pulling back, plus that $300 profit we talked about already. So I'm doing this on like a complete investment term. Now, I decided that this was a bit of a parabolic profit. This doesn't come along every day. I did want to keep a core position, okay, of at least 200 shares in this particular case. And I did take this across multiple accounts, or two accounts at least. But anyway, so I figured let's flip out 100 shares. That's kind of like a gift horse. This thing is not going to go to the sky. And if it does, I still have 200 shares on, okay? So on that parabolic profit, I pulled out $2,890 in margin. So we add all that up, which was $1,996 in profits plus 100 shares. So that'd be another $900 that I put in. So we add all it up and it comes to a net of $502. So if the stock is halted forever and turns out to be worthless, the disaster of this thing being halted, okay, I made $502 on a trade. Now, plus whatever those 200 shares are worth. Who knows? They might be worth zero. what's the old saying? Slim and none, And Slim just left town. So we'll see. But it's kind of interesting that as horrible as this thing looks, it actually turned out okay. And I know, who wants to give up $6,000 in open profits on this thing, or what would that be? At 29, yeah, it's like or round numbers. That's like $6,000 of where you are mark to market to zero. But overall, it still made $500 over several days. And I don't want to do the fuzzy math too much, but if you made $500 every few days, you'd be doing fairly well longer term. Now, I just wanted to get back to what's not in the brochure, and I think that's really important, as the kids say. All trend trades eventually end badly, and the only way to make money trading is to capture a trend. So that's not in the brochure, these open profit drawdowns. And you get what you get, and you don't throw a fit. So here's TFPM. We banked one. We banked. We're looking for 1,000. We ended up banking 964. I think the entry was on a slight gap. And then at the peak, this thing was worth 7309. And if we're stopped out on this one, which we did stop out earlier today, and I'll update the chart for next week, you'd make 3709. And that's a loss, if you were looking at the mark to market, of $3,600. And that's tough, believe me. But at least you made $3,700, plus you made $964 on the first shares. And then you also made some dividends in there, which is not much, maybe $100 worth or so. I'll add it up for next week. So that was actually a so long, is now, I should say, a so long thanks for all the fish. And I'm still in it. Recently, I had to check. I'm still in it. What I did this morning was like a fast move on the open. I put it a hard stop below. It got away from me a little bit, just to be frank, okay? But I do have a trailing stop in that, a 1 point trailing stop, and I'll likely get out by the remainder of the day. I'm trying to improve a little bit on my exits, and it went a little further away from me than I would have wanted to. It was one of those fast moves again. But anyway, getting back to so long and think another slow so long and thanks for all the fish. The KGC was bought way back in May, and I was hoping to make at least a year to show you that I'm not just a wild and crazy in and out swing trader, like the rat going for the cocaine. Now, it took forever to hit the initial profit target, as I've preached 1,000 times, and this is dead money in here, right? Well, you don't know it's dead money until you stop out, right? So there's no need to bail out. And then if you notice, which is kind of cool, they don't always do this, obviously, but it never did go below, or at least have Landry Light below the 30 EMA. Here's a Landry Light down below. Lows greater than the moving average, green. Highs less than the moving average, red. Okay. And if it intersects the moving average, zero. But you can see some green and zero in here during this whole bay. So that was kind of cool that that's, it was able to hug that line. There might be some research, if you're interested, in stocks that kind of hug a moving average like that. Zero Landry Light, or certainly zero downside Landry Light. It might be worth a little bit of research on that when a stock bases around that 30 and never goes below it. But anyway, so this one stopped out yesterday, I believe, for a $7,600 profit. Now, if on that day here, middle of January, you did a mark to market and you started thinking about all the stuff you're going to buy, it's usually a good time to sell a little bit when you start pulling your calculator out, seeing how much money you made. But anyway, that's another story altogether. But if you are focused on that mark to market, that can kind of mess with your head a little bit. You got to be careful. And I know I was doing with the MCTA. I'm like, holy moly, I got all this money. No, you don't, Danny. But anyway, so that slide there was 4,625. Now, did you make $8,500, or did you lose 4,625? Well, your account is $8,000 to the plus, okay, in less than a year. And that's on this. I took real trades on this, obviously, because I mimicked the service trades on my own in what I call my model account. But anyway, but if you get stopped out, or when you get stopped out in this particular case, it's $9,000, almost $10,000. So that's much better than a poke in the eye. You can't focus on what you gave up. And I know it sucks. It really does. Open profit drawdowns suck, and they really do. But that's the only way you're gonna make any money swing trading. Oh, there we go. So we add all that up, 8,550. Okay. And that's on, again, hypothetical 100K. So that would be 8.5% on one stock total. So that's not a bad return on your overall portfolio. Okay, it's not like you made 8% in this one stock. You made 104%, I think, on this one. I get the two of them mixed up, but you made a substantial amount of money percentage-wise on this, and it was enough to make an 8.5% swing in the entire portfolio. So that's pretty impressive, if I say so myself. Oh, here we go, right here. So 104% on the second loaf, okay? So that's pretty good. So this is what I call the so long and thanks for all the fish trade. And that's what you should be saying, not so long and damn, I just lost $4,600 trade. All right, here's a former mystery chart. The mystery charts, for those who are new to the program or stock recommendations I make in my trading service, and if they haven't triggered yet, I show them as what I call a mystery chart in here. I think I stole that idea from David Keller, which I'm going to give a shout out to in a few minutes. Anyway, nice uptrend to pull back to the 30 EMA. And you can see Landrolite goes from 40 or whatever it was, however many bars it's been above that 30 EMA to zero. When it intersects the EMA, remember, it resets or whatever other moving average you're using. It's funny, I get feeling great all morning. All of a sudden, I start my webinar, I sneeze and my nose starts running. Anyway, so there's the parameters down below. I'll just put them on the chart for you. Entry was here, stop was down here, and initial profit target was up here. Now that screen grab might have been on this day here, like I said last week and weeks prior. So when the stock dropped a little further, this entry also came down with it, okay? So you can see it triggers, and it didn't do a whole lot. But at the time of this screen grab, we had $101 open. And let's see what it's doing today. So yeah, it's up a buck and change. So now it's starting to look a little bit better than when I grabbed this screen grab. TLMT, a nice little TKO. This was not a mystery chart because it triggered intro week. And I just showed it to you. But these are all stocks that we were long, or at least reasonably long, in the service. And you can see it makes a little bit of a double top knockout type of move. Double top knockout is when you have a minor double top, two peaks separated by 2 to 3 days at least, or 3 to 4 days at least, ideally. And in this particular case, let's see how many we had. We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you had 5 days of separation between the peaks. And what I also like is I like that right peak to be a little bit higher than the left, okay? So everything I do has a psychological backing to it when it comes to trading. So there's some people out there doing some mumbo jumbo with wave counting and Fibonacci and things of that nature. And I can't wrap my head around it. And judging from what I've seen, a lot of people can't wrap their head around it either. Occasionally they'll print money and then they go back to losing money or whatever. There was one particular person, I've never thrown anybody under the bus, but he called the top of the market in 1987. And that was his claim to fame. And I don't think he's done too well since, but I would never be schadenfreude in this business. Anyway, nice little knockout type of move. So when you have that second peak higher than the left, what that does is it sucks more people in. It creates a little FOMO in the markets and people, the fear of missing out, people rush in at whatever the price. And those are the worst traders, and they have mentally and monetarily, they have very little patience and staying power. So when that knockout move comes, it knocks him out of the market. And that's good because those players are the absolute worst traders and they will really muck your trades up. So it's good to get them flushed out the market. The other thing it does, as I preach, is it attracts eager shorts, and shorts tend to fade the market. They tend to have a bigger ego when it comes to trading, and they tend to want to be proven right by selling at the exact peak. So as soon as the market begins to crack, an overbought market like this, they pile on. In fact, they even short the parabolics, which is why sometimes a TKO could go parabolic. Again, as I said often, I had no idea the shorts were out there doing these wild and crazy type of trades where a market goes straight up and they short it. Now, that'll work until it don't. But that's why sometimes you get into TKO and they go parabolic, because this is a fairly parabolic move, right? So shorts might be trying to short that parabolic, and they get punished when that market goes back to new highs. And the other thing that could happen too is whoever got shaken out and bought the high, they now have a new FOMO about them. They have to put up or shut up and get back in. So the shorts get squeezed, the FOMO traders come back in, and sometimes that could create a parabolic move higher. Anyway, nice little TKO move, and there's parameters down below, okay? So in this case, the entry was kind of a textbook type of TKO. Textbook TKO is when you have a fairly wide range bar down, and you can get in a little bit above the high, and stop goes a little bit below the low. And this was a little bit more lenient. Let's see, 24 was a stop. Yeah, let me just double check this. So the stop was a little bit below the low in this particular case. It was a wide range bar, but it wasn't like a super, super big wide range bar. People like, you know, the rules of TKO, people don't always see the part that I say on a wide range bar, okay? So technically a TKO is only a two bar low. So technically right there, that'd have been a TKO, but it's not a wide range bar. Notice that the bars are similar to the bars around it. Okay, you could use ATR if you want. I like to eyeball things, as you know. But that move there, that's a fairly wide range bar. I'd actually like to see it go all the way down to the 30 EMA in this particular case, okay? So entry stop, initial profit target is up here. So it triggers an entry, and then it kind of meanders around. And when I grabbed this screenshot, you had $262 open. That's on 100K, or per 100K, I should say. All right, here's a short. This is Victoria's Secret. Longer-term uptrend in place there. And then what happens? It just begins to go sideways, okay? Down here is Bowtie Proper Water. Simple little indicator, or as I like to call them, illustrator. And all it's saying is if the 10 simple is greater than the 20 exponential, and if the 20 exponential is greater than the 30 exponential, 10 greater than 20 greater than 30, then I want to count that as uptrend proper order, okay? So you can see this green zone here, it's been in a long, long, long trend. So it's been an uptrend proper water for about 120 days, okay? Up until here, where the moving averages begin to cross back and forth, that means the market is losing some momentum, okay? Doesn't mean the end of the world. You always want to look at the charts to see if it's about to crack or not, right? But then it does begin to crack after going sideways for a while. It did try to break out like right here. Now, ideally, as I just said, I would prefer if this little bar here would have been higher than this other bar over there, okay, to suck in some more people. But at least it did kind of probe higher, and it was right at a new closing high on this day too. New closing highs are very important too. Anyway, so your bow tie is here when it goes from green to red over a short period of time. Ideally, you want to see it go green to red like this, but I'll give it 2 or 3 and maybe even 4 days for those moving averages to come together and spread out. Now, when you have a pioneer type setup, like a first thrust or a bow tie, you don't have the luxury of waiting for a nice deep pullback like we do on the upside, okay? We're waiting for that TKO move or that nice deep pullback to the 30 EMA. We don't have that luxury, okay? On the short side, the market cracks, and then sometimes you only get a little tiny retrace, and then it implodes. And what happens there is, and again, let's go back to the psychology of the players. What's happening there is that a trader, or let's just say an investor, doesn't generally sell stocks on the way down when they're at a loss. They tend to sell them on the way back up, okay? They want to get off the hook. They want to get off at break even. And that's why, again, let's get back to the psychology. That's why overhead supply works, because anybody who bought this stock from, let's just say, 55 round numbers or above to 65 is going to look to get back, to get out at break even if the stock rallies back up to that resistance. And that's really a good place to put your stop, is somewhere just above the bottom of that resistance, because if it starts getting through that, then you might be in trouble on your short position. But anyway, the point I'm trying to get to is, if that rally doesn't materialize, then the longer term investors that are hanging on to this, and even some shorter term traders that are hanging on to this, maybe they got caught off guard, the market implodes, and they're like, well, let's just see if it comes back. If it only comes back a little bit and then implodes, they're going to be forced to sell down the road. Okay. Just like sometimes the shorts might not want to cover when it hits new highs, but eventually when it starts going parabolic, they might be. They'll get forced out for a variety of reasons. They might need the money. Okay. They might get a margin call. So there's a lot of things that could happen. It's like I want to try to go to WebR without saying it, but it's such a good quote from Mary McClellan, which is Tom McClellan's late mother. And paraphrasing, she said, everyone uses timing in their investments. Some people buy when they have money, some people sell when they need money, and others use more sophisticated methods. Anyway, entries here, stop is here, and initial profit target is down here. So the stop is right around this resistance. It really shouldn't get too much past this stop, okay? So we'll see what happens. And when I grabbed this snapshot, we had negative 14.14 open. How are we doing today? It's down a few cents. Anyway, just showed this last week. So you can see uptrend proper order here. 10 green, 20 green, 30. Bow tie, come together, spread out. I usually like to put a 50-day moving average in there. And so let's say this is the 50, and here's your bow ties coming in. Let me see if we get some bow ties. So here's your bow ties coming in to the 50. I like to see it hit them on a sharp angle. So throw your 50 simple in there. Gives you a pretty good reference. Did we have it in the last slide? No, I didn't. But add your 50 simple into that. Anyway, so there's your bow tie. They come together fairly quickly, spread out to the downside. And then you can see right here, this is your a higher high to higher low. Ideally, sometimes you have to take a trade just on a higher low, especially if this is like a wide range bar. But ideally, you want at least a higher high and a higher low. Now, because I think we're going to have to pay attention to the short side, as you'll see when we get to the live charts and when we get to the TFM 10% system in a few minutes, sometimes it helps to flip things over and look at it the other way. Years ago, there was a joke app or whatever, and you could flip the computer screen over. There was a hotkey if you had the app in the background, and I used to use it all the time. It's called Flip or something like that. I don't know if it's still out there. If anybody knows it's still out there, it's pretty cool. And the joke was that you'd go to somebody's computer, install it when they weren't around, and you would flip their screen. So they come in and it looked like the monitor was upside down or whatever. But anyway, I did this at a paint shop program. So it'd be kind of cool if I could find that app or whatever you want to call it and do it live. But I used to do that a lot. I kind of miss doing that. But if you invert the chart, you can gain a little perspective on the deal, okay? And I think this is a wonderful exercise for someone who's not used to shorting, okay? And if you look at this, you can say, okay, you got a big old fat cup and handle bottom. You've got a bow tie to the upside. You also have a first thrust type of setup. So sometimes it gives you a little bit perspective to turn the chart upside down. All right. Any questions at all that? All right, we'll keep going. All right, understanding and trading the VIX. When I put that understanding in there, I had to put a little asterisk. Kind of like Nate Bargatze, it's like, what's the VIX? No one knows. You know, it really is. It's a derivative, but it's a derivative based on a hypothetical. It's based on a hypothetical 30-day perpetual implied volatility of puts and calls on the S&P 100. But like flipping a light switch to get electricity, you don't have to understand how. Flipping a light switch to get light, you don't have to understand how electricity knows. So after I put that in there, it's like, this is just what you need to know. Now, the world is it's interesting. It's such a complex beast, but there are a few things that you should know, and I don't want to steal his presentation, but I got a shout out from David Keller. And Dave was talking about the fact that I use relative levels with the VIX as opposed to fixed levels. And my 10-day or the 10-day simple is what I use in my VIX systems to gauge overbought and oversold, or fear and complacency, as you'll see in a few minutes. One thing I didn't know is that if you were to take the VIX number, it could be equated to an expected move in the S&P 500. Now, let me back up for a second. Implied volatility, if you go to buy an option, and there's a lot of statistics involved, but if you buy an option that has implied volatility of 100%, that means that that market is going to be 100% higher, 100% lower, and I think there's some standard deviations or whatever, like two-thirds chance, 66%, that it's going to be 100% lower, 100% higher a year from now, annualized, okay? So that's a year from now. So that option is implying that this market, whatever market that is, that has 100% IV, implied volatility, is going to just be crazy volatile. Now, my math might be a little off, so don't correct me on all that, please. But just know that if a stock has a very high implied volatility on the options are implying that this stock is just crazy, okay? But anyway, Dave pointed out, because he was talking about that fixed levels are of some use, and I've been preaching against fixed levels, but he did point out, this was in his Friday the 13th, March 13th show, I do believe, and you can find that on his YouTube channel. But anyway, he said that at 16, it's a 1% move. So I Googled it, and son of a gun, it is. So that's implying a 1% daily move in the S&P 500. So if you see a 16% VIX, okay, VIX at 16, you know it's implying a 1% daily move. Now, as that VIX climbs up, it'll climb up to like a new normal, okay? And right now that we're entering this potential bear market phase and things are getting a little crazy, the new normal might be 20-something, okay, on the VIX. And even at the new normal, I'm still using relative to the 10 simple. Let's just see 1 second. I feel like I'm doing a robot. Anyway, so just a quick Google, and that was kind of cool that this came up. So the VIX is 32. It's applied at 2% per day. And at 48, it's applied 3% per day. Now, this is the VIX relative to the 10-day simple moving average. This is what I used in my VIX systems I developed way back in the day, along with Larry Connors' VIX stuff. We started using moving averages after, as I said quite a bit, he explained how the VIX works, and he said it's a reversion to the mean type of market. That's how volatility works. And you never notice after extreme day in the S&P, like you come in the next day, it's kind of like, eh, it's a shoulder shrug. It's like, well, what happened? Everybody had to buy or sell the day before, and the next day, eh. That's the volatility. Volatility goes crazy, and then it comes back in. And as Larry taught me, it overshoots itself, and it does tend to revert back to the mean. So I took what he said literally. A mean is an average, right? So I used a 10-day simple moving average and calculated how far away the VIX was from that. I found on a closing basis that if it's 10% or more away from the moving average, the VIX and the market itself are due to revert to the mean. So if it's more than 10% away from the moving average, it suggests fear in the market, okay? Now, what I did on top of this is I added open, high, low, and close, because I'm using this on an intraday basis. But for all intents and purposes, just focus on the level of where it is. And I wanted to see those spikes, and that's why I added the open, high, low, and close to this. But anything above 10% suggests fear. Anything below 10% suggests complacency, okay? Some people call the VIX the fear index, okay? Now, when it gets stretched to the upside or the downside, you need to look for a reversion to the mean type of move in the market. Now, I found that it can get stretched to the downside and stay there for a long, long time until that becomes a new normal without a meaningful move one way or the other in the market, without a big sell-off, I should say. On the upside, it's a little cooler because it just overshoots itself, like, again, as Larry said, and then it overshoots itself in the other direction, as I learned from Larry too. So when you see these crazy high VIX readings on a spike, you need to think about, if you're position trading, you need to say, okay, this market's due to turn. If you're going to intraday trade, then maybe try to catch that turn intraday. So back on whatever day this was, we had that spike. That was a really great day to step up and do a little day trading. Although I preach against it, I bet if all I did was wait until that VIX was super stretched, I would probably do okay on those day trades. Now, the reason I'm saying day trade as opposed to the position trading that the original VIX systems were designed for, they were originally short-term systems. And once you got that reversion to the mean back, move back, then you got out of the position, whether it was several days or a week later. But it had a limited time frame to it because it eventually catches up. The moving average catches up, or the price, or the VIX price, or whatever, comes down to meet it or up to meet it, whatever the case may be. The problem with that is if something really, really bad happens while you're in the market for only a short period of time, then you're going to be a hurting pup, okay? Go back and look at those trades we did that stopped out recently with those big spankings that we just took, and it sucks, believe me. But, whenever you're boat shopping, that's when you're like, oh, geez, maybe this trade is coming to an end. But anyway, if you are holding day over day, something bad can still happen. Now, a lot of these VIX systems absolutely print money over that short-term time period. And as I said last week and weeks prior, I was looking at some VIX stuff pre-COVID and I was blown away. And then, of course, COVID hits and you would have given up a sizable chunk, if not all of those profits. So now, something like the VIX, I want to focus more on an intraday move, or I want to use it as sort of like a backstop or something to back my position trades if it matters. And again, it only matters when it matters. But you can see here, so you had this spike in the VIX here. And if you squint your eyes, O is open, close is C, high would be cyan, I guess. Or no, close is cyan. I have to look at this. Let's see. Confuse myself. Anyway, we have open, low, high. Okay, open right there. That's the open is white. And then high is green. Okay, red would be the low. And then cyan will be the close. So if you're position trading, pay attention to that closing VIX. And if you're trying to do something intraday, I think these other numbers are useful too. Okay. So you can see the VIX spikes up. And this is the S&P in the background. So there was a panic sell-off coming into this, right? S&P bottoms go straight up. VIX comes right back in. So on an intraday basis, you can play both of those, one or the other, or both. And sometimes get a little traded. Now here, it was a little stretched to the downside, not extremely stretched, and you didn't get much of a sell-off from that in that particular case. And the VIX worked its way back to the mean, obviously. Now this one here, that's a panic type of move, okay? Go back to the previous slide, okay? And then what happens? The VIX reverts back to the mean, okay? Market selling off, people are buying crazy options. They don't care what they cost. I need some puts, and then maybe it's puts and calls. So maybe people are thinking like market's on sale, let me buy some calls. People might have to hedge at whatever price. You don't know what's going on, but that market is just going absolutely crazy. I would urge you not to sell those options, even though they are expensive, but rather play the reversion to the mean move. Anyway, you can see another spike in the VIX here. Okay, so the S&P's bottom went straight up. in the VIX came back to moving average, okay, and so on and so forth. And then this was that last one on the 9th, I think, 8th or 9th. And the market imploded. I'm sorry, the market rallied and the VIX imploded, okay? All right, any questions on that? I know the VIX could be a little crazy at times to wrap your head around. And it is a very complex thing. It's a, again, it's a derivative of a hypothetical based on a derivative. And then if you look at that like an ETF, that's based on VIX futures. And then it starts to hurt my brain. Derivative of derivative of derivative of a hypothetical derivative. I think I got that right. I was deeply impressed after reading your book and became a fan. I'm sending you my gratitude from Korea for your available teachings. Thank you very much. I have a book written in Korean, so I'm glad it was read. Indicators que hasta utilizo boa trade. I'm guessing that's, is that Spanish or Portuguese? Indicators K is what? What indicators do I use? Landry light and bow tie proper water. I think that's it. Anyway, I've been posting a little bit on Twitter or X and my Facebook group. And I was kind of amazed. When we get to the live charts, you'll see I've been seeing a deterioration in this market for a long, long time. By the way, I'm going to say it again. I'll probably say it every week. Greg Morris once said that bear markets are a top, or tops are a process, I should say. So tops are a process and bottoms are an event. Okay. And it seems just the opposite, because now the market's selling off a little bit. Everybody's like, oh, the market's crashing, you know? So the bottom line is, YouTube's going crazy. So the bottom line is, as a general statement, a top is a process. And I've been noticing that the market had been topping for a long, long time. And what happens is that the leadership has narrowed. I look at a couple thousand stocks every day, okay? And that gives me a feel for what's going on. Right now, I'm seeing a plethora of shorts. But if you look at, even if you just looked at a few sectors, or even the market itself, you'd see that it's lost some momentum. Now, this is a weekly chart, but you can see on a weekly basis, the S&P hasn't made any forward progress in several months. So that's a little bit of a concern. So tops generally are like this, like the top of the roller coaster, and then they go down. And it's the going down part that everybody focuses it on, like, oh, the market crashed. Well, the market's been kind of crashing internally for a long time. And that's the advantage of looking at a lot of charts daily, looking at a lot of sectors daily. If you're not going to look at a couple thousand charts every day, look at the indices and maybe 100 sectors, okay, to give you a feel for what's going on. But here's the thing. When you're looking at those charts, and I know I'm kind of backing into some other stuff, but energies, for instance, right now, energies are all-time highs. All service stocks just pulled back from all-time highs. The sectors look fantastic. But inside those sectors, I'm seeing a lot of short setting up, and that's concerning. That's kind of like the last of the Mohicans. But anyway, as a general statement, as long as you're within 5% of the 50-week closing high, and for some reason I used 50 with this system because it was a 50-week moving average, I guess to keep it simple, but I guess 52-week would probably make a little bit more sense. But that's how I designed the system, so we'll go with that. Anyway, my YouTube is backed up for some reason. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, as a general statement, the green zone, which means you're within 5% of all-time highs, is the don't worry, be happy zone. The next zone down, whatever that color is, light pink we'll call it, is the be afraid zone. It means you're 5% or more away from that 50-week closing high. And that was one of my clients, Jeff, who's usually in here. I don't know if Jeff's here today, but he's usually in here on Thursdays, he pointed out that he tends to get very cautious once he doesn't always bail out when you're in that zone, because I think I talked to him and like he didn't bail out back here, but he gets very cautious, okay, when you enter that 5% zone and think about getting out of the market. So we're now, as of today, March 19th, 12:45-ish Eastern time, we are now more than 5% away. So we're in that be afraid zone, okay? And then 10% would be afraid, be very afraid. So the last buy was back here, and the sell would be down here. To sell, the market just has to close below the 50-week moving average and 10% or more away from the 50-week closing high, okay? So you see the top of this green zone here, that's zero. This right here would be 5, and then this right here would be 10. So we'll keep an eye on this system, and we'll see what happens. I designed it to be a longer-term system. I designed it to not give you a whole lot of whipsaw. You have to be careful with whipsaw filters, though, because if you put in too many whipsaw filters, it'll curve fit to historical data. And I can guarantee you that the data in the future will not fit perfectly as you fit it to the past. And that's the danger of system designing. And early on, I got really caught up in all that. I told the system designer once that his biggest drawdown was ahead of him, and he got mad at me. And so, sorry about that, but it is, okay? All right, let's hop into crypto. I doubt there'll be anything to do, but we'll give it a shot. I don't know what's going on with YouTube. It's like it backed up an hour. All right, let's go here. All right, so taking a look at crypto. So Bitcoin's been looking pretty ugly. And as I've been saying quite a bit, every asset class will lose half of its value at some point in your lifetime, okay? And people think that stocks just go up forever. Well, as long as you have a long-term view, you're going to be fine. Well, yeah, but long-term could be 25 years for a market to come back. And people don't believe that. And if you don't believe me, just plot the S&P 500. I no longer argue with people at a cocktail party. I'm just like, okay, well, whatever, you know, which is unusual because I tend to argue a lot. I scored very low in agreeableness. I'm not that bad, am I? Would you agree? Don't you agree? Anyway, so Bitcoin has lost half of its value. And as I've said quite a bit, and hopefully he's not watching with plenty of salt in his wounds, but I have a friend from the gym who has his, I'm guessing his life savings, I don't know, but he has a substantial amount of Bitcoin, a lot. And, you know, he's like, oh, that's okay. I don't care if it goes down. You know, it's like, okay. But I told him, I was like, just remember that all asset classes lose half the value at some point in your lifetime. And that's happened over the last several months, okay, since what, September, it peaked out October. So always keep that in the back of your mind. Ethereum just looks abysmal too. And it doesn't have to be rocket science. As long as you're below that 30, you've got Ledger Lite below the 30, stay away from the market. That doesn't mean buy it if it goes above it, but just use that as a reference, and that'll keep you out of a lot of trouble. All right. Again, I doubt there's anything to do, but sometimes when Bitcoin, of course, is doing well, you could just come in and buy the pairs that are up the most on the day. And ideally, you want them to be making new highs too. That's a stock. Oh my God. XTI. We got knocked out of that one a while back. Look at that stock go. It's huge. I feel like Tiny Elvis. But anyway, I really don't see anything to get excited about here. And as I confessed earlier, I have been doing my homework here. I need to be doing it. I mean, it only takes 5 minutes, if that long, to go through these. So I need to start doing that again. But there's nothing to do here. Is there any pairs you guys want me to take a look at? I'd be happy to do. Take a look at that now. Do that, I think is what I was trying to say. All right, let's just hop into stocks. Here's the bummer with the crypto. Is that it used to It used to be a market that your bull and bear cycles were like every 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe even 6 weeks. And now it's kind of behaving like stocks or other markets, where bear markets are a little bit more pronounced and a little bit longer. All right, here's the S&P 500 looking kind of ugly again today. All right, we're well below that 200-day moving average. Nothing magical about the 200-day, but it is well watched. So that's gonna make headlines if we close down here, especially. NASDAQ Composites, by the way, downtrend, proper order, and all of these. Okay, kind of hard to see, but they came into the 50 sharply, like I discussed earlier. We're now trading well below that 200 simple moving average. Don't be a hero and catch this falling knife, but if you get a huge spike in the VIX, maybe look for an intraday bounce in the S&P 500. But again, don't be a hero. Rusty 2000, a little bit of an opening gap reversal today. It's better than a poke in the eye, I suppose. But look at the angle of inflection again with those moving averages into that 50 simple. Pay attention to that. Very crucial that you do. Dollar's been weak lately. Here's a euro. You can see dollar's been pretty weak. So that's putting pressure on gold, or helping to put pressure on gold. You would think logically, right? You'd want to be buying gold, right? With all the wars and shit happening. But nope, gold's been imploding. And look what's happened today. That's why we got knocked out of our last gold position. And like I said earlier, I'm looking to exit that one on a trailing stop, try to mitigate the damage. Gold stocks just absolutely imploding. That's ugly. So long and thanks for all the fish. It was a pretty good trend. All trend trades eventually end badly. And there's a testament to that. Biotechnology, here's the thing. These areas that have been kind of hanging in there are now beginning to roll over. So biotechnology looks like it's topping out. Look at your bow tie there. Broker-dealer, all-time highs not that long ago, continues to implode. Infrastructure, none of those areas. Look at that, breaking down. Look at these moving averages coming into that 50 at that sharp angle. Software has been in a downtrend forever. A lot of these healthcare-related areas are breaking down. XLV, you can see another healthcare. Look at like a triple top here. Not that you would trade off the triple top, but if you get a bow tie afterwards, which you did here, you can see that's a fairly ugly move out of that. Retail's been ugly too. You can see it's been imploding as of late. Couple other sections I want to show you real quick, and then we'll there's any stock questions you guys, any individual issues you want me to look at, I'd be happy to do so now. Medical devices, been in a pretty serious slide. Defense, look at that. All-time highs here, okay? And now defense has imploded. Well, why? That doesn't make sense. Well, who cares, okay? The reason it's doing that is because everybody thought we're going to have a war, and now we have a war. It's like, oh, okay, whatever. We thought about, we priced that in a long time ago. And that's the perverse nature of markets. What is, is. And that's a hard thing to wrap your head around, seeing what is, especially when it's the opposite of what you want it to be, okay? Here's the transports. You can see they've imploded. They were just at brand new highs not that long ago. Now they have imploded. Okay. Major drugs, again, brand new highs. Look at the angle. I feel like Tiny Elvis. Look at the angle and then bow ties. It's huge. Okay. Just coming in sharply on that 50. Silver, it's been melting down as of late. No pun intended. Steel, which has been strong, has begun to implode. The semiconductors have me a little concerned. Nice little opening gap today, though. So maybe they'll hang in there, but they look like they're topping out too. And that could be another one of those areas where the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Not a huge fan of shorting technology, okay? But we might have to go after some shorts. TSIM was one that I was looking to short, and actually ended up with some puts on it, and see what it's doing right now. It's going straight up, okay? So that's what could happen to you on the short side. You have to be careful because a market goes straight up, especially something that's wild and crazy like a semiconductor. We are short Monster. Okay, so Monster's making energy drinks. They're not splitting the atom. I usually don't care what a stock does, but on the short side, it's like if you get a short a semi or a biotech, it could be a bumpy ride. Okay, not that this won't be a bumpy ride, but so far so good on this one. Knock on wood, we hadn't hit the IPT yet, so I'm not gonna get too excited. But some well-known thick stock like Monster, okay, when it begins to implode, everybody's going to run for the door at the same time. This is just the opposite of what I'm looking for in a momentum trade on the upside. I'm looking for a general smaller cap issues. I'm looking for, looking at Chinese stock, crazy stocks. What else? I got Chinese in that stock. I had a friend of mine that was always getting Chinese. This was back before they had, it was easy to get stuff from China, but he would always order stuff from China, I guess through eBay or whatever. And he ordered throws for Mardi Gras. In the picture, it was a little girl holding a flower, and the flower was about that big, little girls hold a flower. And he got it in, and it was like this big. He used to call it getting Chinese. I'll see if he can send me some pictures for next week. But I got Chinese on that stock. It happens. Where was I going with that? But anyway, on a short, you want it to be a nice and thick, so it's very liquid. And ideally, you want a stock that they're not splitting the atom. So if it begins to implode, there's not going to be a lot of hope for it. Okay. There was a coffee stock years ago. I forget the name of it that we shorted. And they were ended by a presentation. They're splitting the bean, not the atom. Anyway, so Monster's looking kind of ugly on the short side. So now's the time to learn how to short. If you flip this over, I'm sure it will look very bullish, okay? And that'll help you to see both sides of the market. By the way, speaking of seeing both sides of the market, I'm not a huge fan of shorting. There's some logistics involved. You got to borrow them. Sometimes it can be a buyback, okay? But it's the only way to make money when the market rolls over, okay? And it helps you to see both sides of the market. And I think that's very important. As I've preached without going into too many details, those who are long only oriented tend to always see the market as glass half full. And we've been glass half empty for quite some time, okay? Now, the only areas that are rallying now, I mean, it's kind of the last of Mohicans on energies. Right here, brand new highs, and all service has been looking pretty good. Okay, and you can see it's rallying out of this trend pivot pullback here. That's looking pretty good. But as I've said quite a bit, when you get internally, let's see if I can think of one off the top. Anybody knows? I think Baker Hughes comes to mind. Was it BKR? Let's see, is that the one? Yeah. Okay. So here's it's doing really well today, but here's one that looks like it could be in a lot of trouble. Now, this doesn't look like a stock that's in a sector that looks like this, right? This looks like a stock that looks like a stock that was in a lot of trouble, okay? But let's see what happens after today. But I'm seeing a lot of this type of action internally. Now, a lot of them do have some support below, and that's why I didn't recommend this as a short. It really did catch my eye, something I thought was worth trading. Let's take today's day out and you'll see what I'm saying. Okay, so here you've got a sharp sell off. This is the first thrust, and then it pulls back to the 50 simple. And again, though, lots of support down here. That's why I didn't take the trade. It could limit your gains. So anyway, it's kind of getting ugly out there. Throw a dart, home builders, communications. The list goes on and on. So it's starting to look fairly ugly. So be careful out there. Pick your spots extremely carefully. Don't try to catch the falling knife. Okay. The best action is probably no new action. Now, one thing I wanted to get into today, I didn't have enough time to squeeze it at the last minute. I was just grabbing screens about 10 minutes before I went live. But on the short side, you might want to consider deep in the money puts. So on that Monster, I bought some 5-point in the money April puts as opposed to outright shorting it. Okay. And sometimes that's the way to go. And what I like to do, if I get a double on those options, I immediately sell half. But what you probably should do is look at the initial profit target on the spreadsheet, on the trading sheet from the trading service. On sale now, by the way, dailyliner.com/trading service, all one word. But you might want to take a look at that. And if that IPT is hit, look to cash out of those options, depending on how deep in the money you went on those options. And I'm going to walk you through that next week, and we'll see. And I have some trades I could show you there, and we'll see how they shake out, good, bad, or indifferent. I did show these already, believe it or not. We talked about this in the Facebook group, and I was explaining that the fluff wasn't that much. The fluff is how much in addition to the intrinsic value you're paying. And I probably should put it together a slide and all that, so it'll make a lot more sense. But the fluff wasn't too bad on those. So it's like I could hold the stock with a short, let's say 200 shares, okay? So that's $15,000 in margin, round number I have to put up. Or I could buy two options at $5 and change. So I'm putting up $1,000 versus $15,000, okay? And the most I could lose is $1,000. So that seems like a no-brainer to me. They don't always work, but when you go deeper into the money, that fluff is what I like to call it, or extrinsic, comes off. So let's say you're 5 points in the money. That option is worth 5 points at expiration. And that's how you wrap your head around options, by the way. And I'm not gonna dig my hole until I get some slides up to show you. But the way I wrap my head around options is, you look at them like, pretend you're at expiration. So at expiration, if the stock is where it is now and you're 5 points in the money, that option is worth $5, okay? Say they want $6 for that and you've got a month, well, you're paying $1 fluff or extrinsic. Technically, it's called extrinsic, but $1 fluff. Worked for a hedge fund years ago, traded options. They called it fluff. So is the fluff worth it? Well, yeah, if you're putting up $1,000 or $1,200 versus $15,000, and you were planning on using $2,000 risk anyway, and you get in for 2% of 100K would be $2,000 risk. If you can get in for less than that $2,000 you would normally risk, then you might look at the options. The other thing to think about too is, here's where it gets complicated. If the stock doesn't move between now and expiration, you're paying for all that decay. Now, I'm kind of digging a hole here that I didn't intend to dig, but I'll try to flesh this out in a lot more detail next week. But just know that if you go deep in the money, you could do that as a substitution for stock. The aforementioned trader that was running the hedge fund, I had him looked at the options as a substitution for stock chapter and Dave Landry on swing trading, which I'll give you for free, dave.com/free book or free dashbook. I forget which one it is, but I'll correct it in post. And you can get the books for free, but read the chapter on, for your homework for next week, read the chapter on options as a substitution for stock. All right. Any individual stocks you guys want me to take a look at? Going once, going twice. Obviously, I want to thank all you guys and girls for attending. Appreciate you taking time, again, out of your busy schedule. Anything unanswered, david@davelandry.com. Everybody have a great weekend. I'll see most of the guys and girls that are here. I'll see you guys in Facebook in a little while. Everybody else, again, have a great weekend and hope to see you next week. And may the trend be with you. Thank you. You're welcome.